That little speaker on your phone doesn't stand a chance. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. The World Series starts up tonight in KC.
Hollins delivery, ground ball down to third. Fair ball, Moustakas, there it is! The Kansas City Royals have won the American League pennant.
And a 2-0 and a swing and a ball hit deep to right field. And it is gone! Travis Ishikawa has just launched the Giants into the World Series.
You're listening to Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
802, Brady and Walker, two pretty amazing storylines. One, the San Francisco Giants. The other, the Kansas City Royals. And those two clubs meet up tonight, game one of the World Series. You can catch it right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Greg, the smart money you would think has to go on San Francisco in terms of they're a known commodity. Have you begun to exactly quantify what Kansas City has done and what they are yet?
No, and I don't think there's, I'm glad we're going to speak to Jonah Carey at 8:40, but I think he's in line with our thought that there's no magic formula here. There isn't something to emulate for other clubs with the Royals. They don't hit for power. They don't really have a great rotation on paper. It's just one of those things that it's all come together. And saying that, even Andrew, I'm not this, hey, I wouldn't, would we open up the phones and take calls? Hey, do you think the Royals are a team of destiny? No, we wouldn't. There's no such thing. There's no magic. It's not magic. Yeah, but they are executing.
You're acting awfully hard to not convince yourself of that.
I know,
right, now,
yeah,
though.
But listen, they ended up winning the World Series in 85 because the ump made a terrible call on a put out at first base. And everybody remembers the famous Don Denkinger, George Orta play at first base with St. Louis, with them three outs away from being dumped out in six games.
I don't remember it.
Okay, you should. I'll show you the video of it. But the bottom line is you need some breaks. Kansas City is one play away, maybe one extra run, one run away from losing to Oakland in the wild card game. I think San Francisco's experience is massive here. I think Bumgarner is clearly the best pitcher left, the best starter left in Major League Baseball among the two teams, and he might be the best starter in the major leagues next year. So I'm high on him, and just watch. He'll go 4 1/3 and give up six runs tonight. No, he won't. He's not going to do that. So I don't like Kansas City to win tonight. If they're going to hang in this series at all, Ventura has to be better than PV tomorrow night.
Okay, one question before we transition to the Leafs game tonight. And I know what your answer is going to be already, but I'll ask it anyways. What is more likely to happen over the next week? Kansas City continues this remarkable run and sweeps out the San Francisco Giants like they have everybody else? Or San Francisco dummies Kansas City, the clock strikes midnight, and we're talking about a Giants sweep?
No, what I hope is it's not a sweep. And at the same time, we've had a lot of series that we've hoped have been really good, and Kansas City has the home advantage here. So that does factor in. By the time you get here, I'm not sure if home advantage factors in much in terms of regular season games from day to day. If you're on a 10-game road trip, yes, it'll factor in. We saw that with the Jays on a couple ugly road trips this year. So I like San Francisco in this series, and handily at that. They've got young players, but the amount of playoff experience guys like Sandoval and Posey and Pence have, Kansas City doesn't have it. And I'm not all in on experience guy, because that doesn't have to mean anything. Baltimore didn't have any, or barely any, and the Tigers players had lots, and it was over before that even started.
8:05, Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Your worst tweet of the day is coming up at 8:12, and your third and final clue to win Boston Bruins, Toronto hockey tickets coming up as well in about 8-9 minutes from now. The Leafs, Greg, are on the island tonight, taking on the new-look, suddenly rejuvenated Islanders, and they'll go up against another top center in John Tavares. On-air, off-air, we've debated the Toronto Maple Leafs centerman conversation countless times. Have we reached a little bit of middle ground?
It was great to finally wear you down.
I don't think you did that.
Well, the discussion is, simply put, that they aren't good enough at the center position. And that shouldn't be a big surprise that either of us are saying that. There are keener hockey minds than us. There are less keen hockey minds than us. And I think we came to this concept a long time ago. What'll be intriguing tonight is if the concept of playing this third line against the big Tavares line, Tavares is out of the gate doing brilliantly already, 9 points in five games.
He's good. This just in.
That's right. The idea is to play Santarelli and Clarkson and Komarov against them. And you made the point. Yes, you're not going to play even strength. You're not going to be out against him for all 22, 23 minutes that Tavares is going to play, because there's going to be special team situations and you're going to put your best penalty killers out there. I'll be intrigued to see it tonight. I wonder if the first line for the Leafs, not that it matters, will take it personally, because generally speaking, it's been the Bozak group out there, no matter who it is. If it's Getzlaff's line in Anaheim, they play them against them. If it's Kopitar's line, they've played them against them. And obviously in conference, Bergeron's line, Plekanec's line, but we've seen the first line kind of get worked over so far. It's still early. I think they're going to play better hockey, but with just the one win in six regulation games, maybe there is a sense of urgency for Randy Carlyle. I don't know the heat he's feeling on this one.
Well, it sounds bad when you put it that way. They're 2-3-1.
I lied. Tried to make it sound worse.
Now,
just to make
yes,
that greater sense of urgency. Because teams win in overtime.
All right, so what about this, though, for middle ground? Because we've gone back and forth on Bozak and Kadri a lot. I think they're both fine players, but there are some things that these two guys are just not. Now, it's really easy for you to call in. You give us a call now if you want, 416-870-0590. It's really easy to go on Twitter. It's really easy to go on email. It's really easy to call our radio show, Greg, and say, the Leafs need a number one center, and this is a disgrace, and they need to get one. Well, we've said for a long time, as a lot of people have, it's easier said than done. Have we not maybe shifted the talk to this? The Leafs don't need a number one prototypical center as much as they need a guy that can play defense, a defensive center that you can unequivocally match up with the Stamkos, Tavares, Getzlaff, Kopitars of
the
world.
That seems to be it. Because you're going to get your points, and I'm not saying you can stick anybody in. I know that's the constant criticism of Bozak is put, 3 years ago, it's like, Mike Zigomanis, play him with JVR and Phil Kessel.
Yeah, it's a bad opinion, and it's not true. It's just not true.
And I'm not sure you'd even do that with Mike Santarelli. There were people intrigued by the concept of Santarelli playing, because he did for a little period of time in preseason.
And if you're so worried about the defensive side of that line, well, guess what? If you're on the train of, flip Kadri and Bozak and everything will be fine, it doesn't solve anything.
No.
Not defensively, it doesn't.
I don't know, and I don't know who that player is. I brought up Mikko Koivu, but you can't get Mikko Koivu out of Minnesota. That's a guy that you say, he'll get his points, he'll get his 65, maybe 70 points in a good year, but you never worry about him checking. You never worry about him checking, and you never worry about Minnesota winning games 3-2. And we talked about Montreal being very patient with Thomas Plekanec, who obviously hasn't always been Montreal's best center, but for 9 years, he's been a good center there.
My thought is this, and not that these guys are even more readily available than the Getzlaff, Stahls, Kopitars of the world, but I think we need to scale down the sights a little bit. And maybe they've discussed this, Dave Nonis and Brendan Shanahan, rather than find, okay, we need this all-star $7 million center, what about the guys that we don't prototypically call a number one center, but boy, can you match up with them? And I'm talking about Martin Hanzel, Patrick Berglund in St. Louis, right? These are the guys that maybe you try to move mountains for, where the other ones are just, Greg, simply non-starters when it comes to trade conversations.
Yeah, they are. You can certainly also sign what we describe as a number two center in free agency, and a lot of people have done that. So even if we say on a really good team, Kyle Turris isn't your best center, on a cup contender, he's not, that's okay to say that. But Ottawa was able to trade for him. I'd even look at a guy like Filppula in Tampa, right? We talked about that with Detroit last week. Detroit could keep Filppula or sign Steven Weiss.
That's a bad call.
They made a mistake on that, and it's almost exactly the same money. Mike in Toronto at 8:11. You're on Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, morning, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Good. I just wanted to mention, I guess, about Bozak. I don't necessarily think we need to upgrade per se. What I would expect more from Bozak is to win 70-75% of his faceoffs.
That's a lot.
That would be the highest number in NHL history.
Okay, 65%.
That would also be the highest number ever.
To 55.
Yeah, to be in the top of the league in terms of winning faceoffs. With puck possession being such a big thing, we need Kessel and JVR starting with the puck when they're on the ice.
Yeah. I mean, Patrice Bergeron's maybe the best faceoff guy in the league. Maybe he is, and he wins about 61-62% in a full season. He's higher than that right now, but it's six games in.
8-12, Brady and Walker. Let's do an admittedly convoluted worst tweet of the day.
Brady and Walker's worst tweet of the day.
You know, everything is not an anecdote. You have to discriminate. You choose things that are funny or mildly amusing.
Don't undersell your worst tweet. You're making excuse like I was proud of our Jennifer Sturger tweet yesterday.
That was really funny.
She deserved it.
Okay, so have you ever had, let me ask you this. Have you ever had a psycho stalker in your radio career? Versions of one
that I haven't worked with?
Okay.
No.
We have this listener, this super fan. I don't know what you want to call him, but
he's super all right.
We've both
super something.
We've both blocked him on Twitter because he's a bit crazy. I don't know exactly how. So what this guy has done, and it's easy to read every time, he makes up fake Twitter accounts. Just so he can interact with us. But he's so easily, you can easily see it every time.
Tell me what the giveaways are.
All right. Well, it's a big tennis fan. All right.
That
so here, here's the latest. The latest fake account we have pinpointed. It's at Volker Holman. And he asked me
a
question.
You don't even have to mention. No one's going to follow him.
Well, maybe they will.
Yeah.
He asked me, who would you rather have in your prime? J.J. Watt, Deion Sanders. And
we were going to do that topic at 8 this morning.
And my response was, hi, I see you there, fake account. I'm going to block you again. So this was his series of tweets overnight. I had Fan590 Walker. I answered your question. Now your turn, Andrew, please. Are you kidding me? I answered your question. And now you refuse to answer the question. If you're too scared to answer the question, just say so. Why did you ask me a question and say you first, implying you would answer my question afterwards? You are just not interested in answering questions, period. Fake account or otherwise. Apparently you are interested in asking questions of a fake account, right? I answered your question. Now your turn. Chicken. Blocked.
See, that's
delete. Mute.
He'll
whatever
be back.
You do on Twitter.
He'll be back. That sounds like about 11 tweets in a row.
Yeah, it was a lot of tweets in a row.
Yeah. That's strange he's not hanging out with his friends or his girlfriend or wife.
It's the worst tweet. It's the worst tweet by far. 8:14. Brady and Walker, we want to send you to the ACC.
Are you out of breath a little bit?
A little bit.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Riled me right up. Want to send
don't
you to
let, will, you got, will you not let as many people rile you
I know,
up? Maybe
I
for
know.
A couple days have a little cool-out period. Like, lower
to,
the temperature in your condominium a little bit.
I need to log off Twitter for a while.
Get the thermostat down from 78 Fahrenheit, because that just will provoke.
Between
reactions.
Fenwick and Tyler Bozak, and I just can't do it
God.
Anymore.
I don't know who this Fenwick neighbor of yours is, but doesn't sound like a nice guy.
We want to send you to the ACC, courtesy of the Great Blue Heron Casino. Coming up Saturdays, the Boston Bruins are in town. Name us that player. This is clue number three. We gave you a clue at 6:14 and 7:14 this morning. Name that player. This former Toronto forward had the most goals on the team in 1999. Yes, more than Matt Sundin, which was a rarity over the 10-12 years that Sundin led this team in goal scoring.
Coming up at 8:22. Dwayne Casey, head coach of the Toronto Raptors, but he needs to answer for what's wrong with his Seattle Seahawks. Come on, coach, send Pete Carroll a note. Give him some inspiration, will you?
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free. You're listening to Brady and Walker.
Those goofy bastards are just about the best thing I've got going in this crazy world.
On Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, 23, good morning, Brady and Walker. Congratulations to Mark in Barrie.
Tight, yeah!
You were going to the ACC Saturday to see Toronto take on the Boston Bruins. He knew that the Toronto player this morning was, in fact, Sergei Berezin. And I learned a lot about Sergei Berezin doing the research on this today.
I bet.
He had more goals than assists, like, every year. Who does that?
People who... So it's your... Wendell Clark did that pretty consistently as well. Very consistently.
Like, Sergei Berezin had, like,
the finisher.
37 goals and 20 assists. That's hard to do.
That can happen.
It's hard to do.
So, Strombo and Merrick with a special guest, a very well-known, talk about your A-listers, right, coming up on Off the Ice.
Yeah,
Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds, the actor.
That's
coming up at about 8:32.
Soon to be
morning.
A new dad with his fiancée, Blake Lively.
Know.
I don't know what's happening there.
Do you think
I wanted it to work out with him and Alanis, and I haven't forgiven him for that since.
Do you think he's buddies with Strombo or Merrick?
Both. And Dominic Moore. Jonah Carey will join us at 8:42 on the court. A week from tomorrow night, they'll kick off the first of 82. We can't wait. The Atlanta Hawks will be the first regular season opponent for the Toronto Raptors. They'll hit the road, play the Orlando Magic the next Saturday. Still a couple preseason affairs to come, including an exhibition against Maccabi Haifa tomorrow night. They'll have the Knicks here Friday. Head coach of the Toronto Raptors is Dwayne Casey, and he rejoins us again on Brady and Walker. Coach, thanks for making the time. How are you?
How are you doing, guys?
Pretty now, how about we tell you that the NBA, Adam Silver, has decided to extend the preseason another 2 weeks. How'd you feel about that?
I tell you what, it's a great debate. It's a great conversation. I think you can go both ways. You know, some teams would love to have an extra 2 weeks, and some teams would love to have 2 weeks less. You know, and I think it depends on, you know, where you are in your program. I think 2 or 3 years ago, we would love to have 2 extra weeks. But this year, I think it's if you have continuity, it's a little bit easier to get where you need to be to get the regular season going. And so I think that's going to be a great debate around the league for the next few years.
Tell us a player or two that you think has had a very good preseason. It's tough to judge with numbers, and the matchups aren't all the same. Tell us a player or two that you've really liked what you've seen that can apply that starting next Wednesday to a really good start out of the gate for you.
Well, I love what the starting unit has done. I mean, as far as playing as a unit, the few minutes they've played together in these exhibition games, and like you said, there's very little that you're going to take away from these exhibition games other than conditioning and a little bit of timing and rhythm. But as far as individual performances, it's very difficult to judge because they're not getting the consistent minutes or the true minutes that they're going to get during the regular season. So it's very hard to tell individually. But as a group, when that group was together, I thought they clicked pretty well defensively and offensively, they picked up where we left off a little bit as far as rhythm and timing and knowing where to go and what to do on the offensive end. But one area that's and I've repeated to say and that we've got to make sure we take care of is our defensive rebounding. I think we were like 24th in the NBA in defensive rebounding. And, you know, if you play good defense and you don't get that offense and defensive rebound, you know, it's all for naught. So we've got to do a better job of rebounding and it's a five-man job. It's just not on the big guys. The guards have to come back in and rebound and do a good job of cleaning up the paint.
As a coach, one that would be a leader on this team, a captain type, a voice of reason, how do you manage expectations and trying to keep everyone on an even keel? You go back a year ago, you could have made a lot of money betting that the Raptors would win the division title. And now this year, all of a sudden, everyone almost expects a division title. How dangerous can that be?
Well, it's very dangerous because, you know, no one can foresee the future. You know, we like where we are as a team, but no, there's no guaranteed spots in the NBA. I mean, you've got to go in and earn it. What we did last year, as I've told the team many times, it was last year, we've got to start from scratch. You know, expectations, I think, are for the fans and for the media. And a lot of those same media people and fans were saying we were going to be in the lottery last year. So, you know, you have to take that with a grain of salt. We've got to continue the growth of our team is what I've been preaching for the last 2 or 3 years, and that's going to continue. Nothing's going to change from that standpoint. And the expectation, guys, and is for our great fans and also for the media. And it's good for our team to have a higher expectation, but that doesn't mean a hill of beans come next Wednesday night when we walk on the floor.
Raptors, Atlanta Hawks, a week from tomorrow night, as Coach Casey mentioned. He's on with us, Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. James Johnson looks like the kind of player, I know it's his second go-around with the Raptors, Coach, that would have been ideal for you in that playoff series against a Joe Johnson last year. Is that you got him for the regular season too, but come April, he's going to be very valuable to your team in a playoff series, covering that kind of really wide, really, really, you know, strong shooting small forward. That's what he's here for.
We call those guys the power threes, I think. Mm-hmm. The new term you call those guys. And our conferences is littered with those guys around. And James does fit that mold. And I think this year DeMar's going to do a better job. DeMar's gotten stronger. Terrence Ross has gotten the weight room. This summer's gotten stronger. So, you know, those guys, not only James, but I'm putting the onus on DeMar and also Terrence to be ready to guard guys like that, because James can't play 48 minutes. So they're going to have to do their part as far as defending those guys and get better at it. You know, and that meant getting the weight room this summer, and they did that. So, but James is an excellent addition to our team. We're excited about having him back. And, you know, he's going to bring a lot of athleticism, toughness, and a defensive presence at that position that we really need. And especially coming off the bench, he's going to give us that toughness and that spark coming off the bench.
Dwayne Casey, our guest. A lot of folks, and we talked about it last year as you guys really got rolling in January, and we talked about it in the playoffs. A lot of people talked about it in the offseason, how good your rotation was when Kyle and Grievous were on court at the same time. Do you look for situations where you can do that? A guy like DeMar is only going to sit 8, 9, 10 minutes a night for you. Can you have all three of them on the court and have a much faster, smaller group? Is there a way to get Kyle and Grievous out there together, because it did work so well?
It did. It really did. That lineup, and what it does, it takes it allows Kyle to get off the ball a little bit and rest and use his three-point shooting ability. It also can allow Grievous to go in and rest a little bit and space a little bit and use his three-point ability while Kyle handles the ball. So they can trade off handling the basketball. You know, adding Lou Williams to the mix will also help us cut Kyle and DeMar's minutes somewhat, not a lot, but a little bit, to give them a little bit of rest where they can finish the game strong and be fresh down the stretch in the fourth quarter. So that's going to be an addition that will help us. But the combination of Kyle and Grievous is one of the top, you know, guard combos in the league, as well as Kyle and DeMar. So Grievous is a spark that gives, you know, a three-point threat. He plays with a lot of passion, a lot of confidence, a lot of swag that he brings to the floor. It really helps our team.
Do you want to send a 20-second salvo out to inspire your Seattle Seahawks? What's going on there, Coach? It's hard when the target's on your back, isn't it?
It is. That laser gets on your chest, and that's what, you know, expectations. And I think if you go back, you know, I think Coach Carroll was preaching the same thing we're preaching at the beginning of the summer. Hey, you know, last year was last year. You know, that was a challenge. We got to, what's next? What do we have to do next? We have to burn. And that's true in any sport, and that's a great example of, you've got to come in with the mindset of, I got to put my hard hat on, my work boots, and be ready to work. I mean, forget about last year, you know, and because we're in a business of, what have you done for me lately? And that's the way that our staff and we're approaching. Our players have approached that way also. They don't feel they're entitled to anything, and, you know, their expectations go out and prove themselves again this year.
Just tell your guys to be aware of fake punts this year. That seems to be their
undoing.
That was
a big play, wasn't it? I mean, but I think St. Louis had just done it last week. They had a similar play the week prior to that, and so that caught him off guard. But, you know, the season's not over. It's a long season, and I think they'll respond and bounce back.
Hey, Coach, best of luck getting ready, and it'll be an unbelievable energy tomorrow, a week from tomorrow, of course, against the Atlanta Hawks. We'll see you down there. Thanks for the time this morning.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks, Coach.
It's Dwayne Casey joining us. Can't wait. It's kind of creeping up. I know a lot of people cover the NBA, say, oh, the preseason's taking forever. He's saying it's taking forever, but when it gets here, then you got a game every 2-3 nights.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun to see how they measure themselves against what's going to be a different East this year. It's not just Miami and everybody else, obviously, now.
Coming up at 8:42, we will tell you about a song that has been banned in a couple of places. And why, exactly, as it pertains to the World Series.
Now, is this Frankie Goes to Hollywood's Relax? Because there are some images in that video that shouldn't... You know, that's why.
Yeah, that was banned a long time ago.
Relax, don't do it when you want to. No?
I have no idea what you're talking about, by the way. No.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
They're a good team. We're a good team. You know, you don't get to this point without, you know, being a good team. So, you know, you just got to go out there and execute, you know, see what happens.
That's Barry Zito, former Giants. No, it's not. That's Eddie Money, noted rocker.
It was Dan Aykroyd of SNL fame. I don't know. Brady and
Walker.
Sooner
or later, we'll mention somebody that's not alive, and then you'll be in trouble.
Yes. 8:42, Brady and Walker. Game one of the World Series, by the way, tonight. Catch it right here. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It's Madison Bumgarner against James Shields, 8 p.m. Don't forget Mike Wilner as your pregame show at 7, and Jose Bautista will join him at 7:30 and take some of your calls.
Hot stuff. 7:30, Mike Wilner and Jose Bautista hanging, banging, draining booster juices for an entire 30 minutes or so. Draining them, potentially. Maybe.
Can I give you this is way off topic, but a bit of a pet peeve that kind of creeped up its head yesterday,
yeah, and you saw it firsthand. You weren't even here this weekend, but the Toronto Waterfront Marathon went on in crappy weather on Sunday, and congratulations to everybody who finished and tried to finish.
But I don't want to be snobbish here, but there's a big difference between a marathon and a half marathon, and both are great accomplishments. But if you run a half marathon, don't pretend like you run a marathon. Right?
What? Who would do that?
I don't know. People.
People on... What about... So there's a 5K also. That's beyond... Like, you may as well cheat in the actual marathon. Take a bus for the first 17 miles and then hop off the bus.
Be like the lady won the Boston Marathon 25
Rosie
years ago.
Rosie Ruiz. Yes. Yeah, exactly. Do that. Take the subway. So, yeah, you could have run a 5K. You could have done a half marathon. You could have done a marathon. You're not really... a marathoner. Like, I saw this guy last night. My kids watch Wheel of Fortune now. They like puzzles and vowels and stuff. And they go, Vanna White, dad thoughts. And I'm like, I don't know. It's a lot of plastic surgery. But this guy comes on. It's like, hey.
I still would.
Frank, Pat Sajak says, Frank, you're a runner of some sort. Thank you for that. And Frank's like, yes, Pat, I love to run. I love to get outside. And I run some 5Ks and some half marathons and marathons. And I instantly yell at the TV. I'm like, don't even mention the 5K. That's what people do trying to lose weight. We're not impressed by this. You look like a sleek guy.
That's like 25 minutes on the treadmill.
Just say you run marathons. You're not a weightlifter if you go to the gym and put 110 pounds on the rack. That doesn't make you a weightlifter.
Maybe I'm just being a dick. Maybe I'm way off base.
I just see
like my Facebook feed, my Twitter feed, and people are like congratulating someone for like just inspirational. You ran the Toronto, you know, marathon,
right.
Except you ran a half marathon. It's still good, but you don't pretend like you ran the marathon.
It's
like 50% of the marathon.
My grade 3 kid runs cross country this year, and we drove to a cross country meet to see him in this big meet. And there are some kids that are walking the whole time. And I want to be like you don't want to yell at other people's kids, but you're like, let's go, pick it up. It's not a walk-a-thon. Why don't you just ride an ATV around the course?
You're so lazy. Raising money for the SPCA.
You kid?
Jog.
All right. Jonah Carey probably shares none of these sentiments.
Absolutely zero.
Writes for Grantland, of course. You know him well. That great Expos book, The Extra 2% also. You tell us about tonight. There's no real rest versus rust factor. It probably won't play in. Though it could have had the Royals swept and had the Cardinals extended the Giants a bit further. But really a non-factor tonight.
I don't think so. And here's the thing. It's not 9 days in this case. It's 4 or 5 for these two teams. And that actually works out perfectly because it allows them to set the rotation. I think the biggest issue really is that, you know, if you're playing the next day after you win, then you have to go with, you know, potentially your number 3 or number 4 guy. And that's a real disadvantage. Here, the Giants and the Royals are going to get to throw out Bumgarner and Shields in game 1 and 5. And if it goes to game 7, they could use either one out of the bullpen, which is a big weapon. So, you know, and even back in the day, we would have said, oh, gosh, if it's, you know, a Roger Clemens type or even further back a Sandy Koufax type, then they could start 3 times in the 7-game series. So, you know, either way, I think it's one of those situations where that's the only thing I see being a factor. And, heck, I mean, it's possible there's some guys, maybe not to the same extent as like football, but there's probably some guys with some bumps and bruises too. Gives them a little extra healing time. So I really don't see any negatives, and I think there could be some positives.
Jonah Carey, our guest on Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. One thing we've talked about quite a bit, I think, in the last couple of weeks is the way the Kansas City Royals play the game. And I don't know if baseball is a copycat league, say like the NFL or the NHL is, but is there something to be said the way they've kind of bucked the trend a little bit with this small ball? Are we going to see an element of maybe copycat going forward?
Well, the thing is that I think there's a little bit of a misperception to some extent about the way that the Royals play ball. It's certainly true that they steal a lot of bases. They're number one in Major League Baseball on stolen bases, and they do a good job of running first to third, second to home, and all that. But the bunting thing, that was kind of a concoction of a few playoff games. During the regular season, they were middle of the pack. They didn't bunt all that much during the regular season, so that's not really in play. They really do a good job of contact hitting is what they do. They were last in the majors and strikeouts, meaning they had their best contact rate. And that's sort of reminiscent of the 2002 Angels, if anything, who were a team that played, you know, in the middle of a high offense era. They just hit a lot of singles and doubles. They hit some home runs, of course, but singles and doubles really played into it. And that's a good thing. You know, I mean, I think if you could put the ball in play, you have a chance to impact what could happen. Obviously, it's, you know, potentially better than a strikeout, acknowledging that there's risks of double play. So there's that. And, you know, they have good pitching. They have a great bullpen. And they have a pretty good starting rotation. I don't think that's all that innovative. Everybody wants pitching. So, you know, to me, I look at it and I say, okay, you could argue about the copycats, but let's not forget the Royals finished last in the majors this year in home runs and last in the majors this year in hitter walks.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to emulate that. That's bad.
I know.
It's actually kind of remarkable that they are where they are.
Well, I mean, yes, last in home runs is incredible. And they've obviously hit some more in the postseason, but yeah. We look at a team like the Blue Jays here, and it would be unfathomable to consider, you know, this team having any chance at winning if they were, I don't know, in the bottom five of home runs, let alone last.
Well, sure. And I think, you know, part of it comes down to just the makeup of your roster. You're not going to get rid of Bautista and Encarnacion. They're fabulous players. If it happens that your best players also strike out 150 times, you're not going to say, well, let's get rid of these guys and let's go get a bunch of Gerard Dysons who strike out 20 times but hit 220 and have no power. Obviously, that's not a good trade-off. In a perfect world, you want, I don't know, a Vladimir Guerrero type, you know, somebody who hits 40 home runs but also doesn't strike out, a Joe DiMaggio type, I guess. But that's really, really hard to find. Those are generational players. Pujols in his prime was another guy like that, too. So you sort of take what you take. I mean, I know that people want to say, oh, the Blue Jays strike out too much and they rely on the three-run homer. Yeah, but you don't want to get rid of your two best players either. So you kind of are where you are. And, you know, I think in a perfect world, maybe you try to surround those guys with seven other players who are a little bit more contact-oriented, maybe 10, 15 home run guys with some doubles and fewer strikeouts. But again, you can't have everything. You can sort of try to, you know, maneuver your roster however you want, but there's only so many available players, and sometimes you just sort of end up where you end up.
Yeah, you nailed it, because Jonah Carey from Granley, we were all gushing collectively about the collective power of the Baltimore Orioles, who had almost 40 more home runs than the Blue Jays, and then poof, a week later, that's the randomness of the postseason. I bristled a little bit. I love when you write big picture about franchises, where they're going, the trends. I bristled a little bit about some of the romanticism about David Glass and the Royals. Can you kind of, I mean, it was really, they laid it on a little thick at home, because fans were on the verge of walking out. Still, I'd say not all of them have come back. They're 25th in major league attendance this year. Is this a guy that just finally, you know, instead of sticking revenue sharing money in his back pocket, put it out there and now has had some success? I don't know that there's a model. There's no blueprint to follow David Glass's ownership.
No, I don't think so. You know, I think it comes down to they had years of high draft picks and they developed well and they finally got some good players in the majors and they made some good deals. You know, I was critical of the deal that got them James Shields and Wade Davis, but it, of course, it's worked out great. They developed guys like Danny Duffy and Ventura, not to mention all those position players. And, you know, that is a tribute to the personnel that they have in the front office and the scouts and the minor league coaches and so forth. I will say that Glass has improved, not so much in major league payroll, but they are spending more in international, and they're willing to spend on the draft. You know, if there's a guy that costs a couple bucks, then they'll go do it, and so that works out fine. But I'm not, you know, that's as far as I'm willing to go. There's a whole separate conversation to be had about Walmart's practices, but anyway. You know, the bottom line is I think that you credit the people that David Glass hired, not so much Glass himself.
Can you talk about, there's a lot of talk right now that the Boston Red Sox might be making Yoenis Cespedes available for trade this winter. Mm-hmm. What is that going to look like?
Well, I don't know that it would be all that exciting because he's only under contract for one more season. So, you know, you could have, I mean, unless it's somebody who's a generational player, if Mike Trout was in his walk year or Clayton Kershaw was in their walk year, it would be a feeding frenzy. You know, whether or not they could re-sign the guy, having 1 year of Clayton Kershaw could win you the pennant. Cespedes is a good player. He's not that good. So I think it could be the type of situation where it'll help a team. But when you're talking about who you'd get back, you know, I look at it as, you know, kind of similar to Lester, right? Lester was a free agent to be, and he got Wells Cespedes in return. So I think that you, if you turn that around, you would get a pretty good pitcher, a pretty good hitter, or maybe a B-plus, A-minus type of prospect, but you wouldn't get, you know, a Buxton or Sano from Minnesota, a guy like that. I don't think that somebody like that is going to get traded for Cespedes. But the Red Sox right now have about seven starting outfielders, and they got to sort that all out. And if they feel this is the best way to do it, as opposed to trying to trade, I don't know, Daniel Nava, who's not going to get you anything, then okay, I guess that makes some sense.
Jonah, thanks so much for this. Enjoy the series, and we'll be reading.
Thank you, fellas.
The excellent Jonah Carey joining us on Brady and Walker. Hope
really
you enjoy that. Ed Olchuk will join Jeff Blair for his weekly set to at 9 o'clock this morning as he gets you prepped for Leafs Isles tonight. We were trying to think, Jeff, earlier this morning, when's the last time the Leafs played a division-leading New York Islanders team? I'm just going to wager Brian Trotsche was on the team. I'm just going to go that far out of the gate,
you know,
and
what?
Say that.
Butch Goring will join us at 9:40. We'll ask him if he, remembers.
He might not.
He
might not
probably.
Know either.
Their magic number is still pretty significant, but they are getting some attention for being 5-1 to start the season. Put it that way.
Yeah, and they're an exciting 5-1 too. They're a fun team to watch. They've got John Tavares.
My biggest question going forward on the Islanders is because it's always been, boy, how do you draw anybody there? Who wants to play in that rink? Mark Streit is kind of the most notable free agent. The script might be flipped when they move to Brooklyn.
I think it's going to be kind of cool to play in Brooklyn.
Yeah, I agree with you. Brooklyn's like one of those places that just screams cool. And, you know, my concern is, you know, I don't necessarily know the geography of the region, but where are your season's ticket holders going to come from? Where's the fan base going to be?
And are a few going to still truck in from Long Island?
But yeah, you know what? Hey, it's like you're living in Manhattan, man. Brooklyn, it's going to be pretty cool.
I mean, everybody.
Plus, it's a great arena.
The Rangers never have a problem getting free agents.
Absolutely.
And it's not like they've had a load of success. Plus, really small, compact arena. They're going to host 15,700 for hockey.
Yeah.
But you're going to shoehorn them in. It's going to be a loud building
to
play in.
It's a sweet, sweet building.
Meantime, they'll play in basically a battleship hangar tonight with rats and leaks.
It's like a Quonset from back home in Manitoba for Jeff Blair.
Pretty damn close. All right, so Jeff Blair next with the Jeff Blair Show. Hockey Central rocks the house at 12 noon. Have a great
rocks
day.
Rocks the house?
They
what are you
might.
Talking
they
about?
Could, that could happen.
Lord.
It could possibly.
Good Lord, rocks the house!
See you tomorrow.